Welcome to the latest episode of the IA School of Thought series with me, Syed Kamal. The series is based on the IA book, School of Thought, 101 Great Liberal Thinkers by Dr. Amon Butler, which, as the title suggests, summarizes the thoughts of leading classical liberal thinkers on a range of issues, and we discuss them within a modern context. All the episodes in this series and all other online content can be found on the IA YouTube channel, IA London. You can listen to the podcasts on Podbean, and also find content on our website, ia.org.uk. Now, today's featured thinker is Anders Chydenius, who is an 18th century Finnish priest and was also a member of the Swedish Parliament. And to discuss the man, his ideas, and his contribution to classical liberal thought, I'm delighted to be joined by Swedish author and historian of ideas, Johan Norberg. Johan, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, can I start off by just asking generally, why did you pick him? What was it about Mr. Chydenius that inspired you to choose him? Did he have a profound impact on you specifically? You know, was there something that stood out about him? I know there's a lot of questions, but you know, in effect, why did you choose him?
Well, first of all, he's not British. So he doesn't belong to the Anglo-Saxon classical liberal tradition, but my own Nordic and Swedish tradition. And I think that's important to find that this is a common heritage throughout the world. We can find pioneers in liberal and libertarian thought, even in a very remote place like the one Chydenius was born into. And this is another fascinating thing. He didn't come from the Swedish capital. He didn't go to the Enlightenment salons in London and Paris. He was born in a poor rural part of what was then Eastern Sweden. Nowadays it's Finland, but close to Russia, very far away from the universities and from the political salons. And from that soil and from that meeting with the poor peasant farmers out there, he managed to create a novel and very consistent liberal body of thought. Free trade, free speech, freedom of religion, laissez-faire, limited government, ideas like that. And he also put them into practice, not just by writing about it, but also by going to Stockholm, to the Swedish Parliament, and implementing many of these ideas. He had a sharp tongue, and he was rhetorically gifted and managed to sway public opinion and thought in Parliament as well. So he got many of those ideas put into place, including a unique freedom of the press statute. In 1766, Sweden is the first country in the world, to my knowledge, to adopt freedom of the press in the constitution and abolish censorship. And that was Anders Chydenius' doing. So he was a man of many talents.
Now, it's interesting you say that he wasn't a member of any salon, as it were, or any school particularly. So what influenced him, or who influenced him? You know, how did he develop his ideas?
Well, he got in touch with some of the Enlightenment ideas, often through some Swedish interpreters who wrote about it here. He read the French physiocrats, and that's how he came up with some of his economic ideas. But originally, he started to use them and those ideas because he just wanted to improve life for the poor farmers in Finland and Sweden. So he came up with ideas, how can we improve agricultural technologies? How can we come up with a better way of cultivating tobacco? He was a pioneer when it came to early inoculation against smallpox, variolation, and things like that. But then he also saw that many of these things were stopped by the elites, the urban elites, the aristocrats and the king. So he came up against protectionism, high taxes, the lack of rule of law. And so then he basically said, and this was obviously very controversial at the time, fatherland without freedom and gain is a large word, but with little meaning. So he sort of forced himself to read up on other ideas about how we can create a society without this constant coercion by these elites. And then he found thinkers like Turgot, Quesnay, and others who had written about this, but he developed it in a very unique Nordic fashion.
Now, Amon Butler, in the book, 101 Great Liberal Thinkers, talks about his key work being The National Game, I think published in 1765. What can you tell me about that work?
Yeah, this is a fascinating work. It's It's a fairly short pamphlet, but it's early. It's sometimes we say that he beat Adam Smith to it. He was 11 years before him. He wrote about the invisible hand, not in those words, but he had exactly the same kind of view of human nature and of a spontaneously organized society. If we had a system of laws with a rule of law, fairly defined property rights and freedom of negotiation and of trade, then in that case, he thought that every individual spontaneously finds the place and the trade in which he can best increase the national gain. And this was obviously very controversial. People thought that they had to force the farmers to do something there. They were not allowed to trade where they were. They had to go to Stockholm or one of those cities to trade, because otherwise cities would die out. No, he said that the more freedom we have for the individuals, own inclinations, the more gain does he bring society and his peers, and vice versa. So it is really the invisible hand that he's describing there. And that whole thought that we don't have to consistently stop people and control them, because their own individual self-interest, rationally understood long-term self-interest, is in the interest of everybody else as well, if we have a fair system of laws. And from that, everything else followed from Chydenius. And that's why he was so consistent. He wanted to reduce taxes to a minimum. He wanted to have complete free trade, abolish the monopolies and the privileges and the subsidies going to particular industries and to other places.
Now, you said at the time his ideas were considered controversial. We know classical liberal ideas in some circles are still considered controversial today. Did he have an immediate impact, or was he someone who struggled to get his ideas heard at the time, only to be vindicated later?
He had an immediate impact because people read his books and his pamphlets, and many in Parliament were convinced by what he was saying. So many of the laws and the changes that took place in 1765 to 66 were he was the person who brought them about, or got the train in motion, so to speak. The freedom of the press statute was incredibly important there, but also some minor changes in towards freer trade, abolishing subsidies to particular places. But he was very controversial. He was so very controversial even within his own group, among the priests and who wanted some sort of censorship, and in his own party, the more liberal party, weren't as liberal as he was. So actually he was not praised throughout Parliament this session. At the end of it, he was actually thrown out. He was banned from Parliament and the next parliamentary session as well for being too controversial and having criticized his own party's financial plan. So he actually retreated back to Eastern Sweden, to Finland, in disgrace, in a way. Someone had said that it was dangerous to have that much genius in a chaplain, in an assistant vicar as Chydenius. He was too influential, and the aristocrats at the time, they thought that he was beginning to sort of implement a real revolution. So he retreated there, and people thought that he had been too dangerous, and he was out in the cold for a long time, sitting there and actually for a while composing music and taking care of his own own people back there. But he also wrote pamphlets that were far ahead of his time on freedom of religion, freedom for servants who were back then not allowed to negotiate their own wages. They were often in an abusive relationship with the heads of households and so on. And those ideas were later on picked up by others, including actually the king, Gustavus III, who had his own coup d'etat in 1772 because he thought that the parliament was too unruly. But he wanted to be this kind of enlightened king. So he actually welcomed Chydenius back into Stockholm and into the popular discussions, and gave an official blessing to his ideas on freedom of religion, for example, so that even Catholics, Calvinists, Muslims, and Jews were allowed to move to Sweden and keep their own old religions. So eventually, a new generation, including the king in certain ways, but also the next generation of thinkers, of pamphleteers, of revolutionaries in Sweden, they thought that Chydenius was the pioneer.
Now, obviously, we know he was a priest. We've talked a bit about his politics and his political involvement as a member of parliament. What more can you tell us about him as a person, about his life?
Well, the fascinating thing about him was that he constantly challenged himself with new ideas. He was very consistent. He started out with freedom because he thought that that's what we need back here in this, to make this poor rural part of Sweden to flourish. People need freedom. It's not enough with fatherland and patriotism, because it seems like everybody's leaving the moment they get some freedom of migration. They need something else. They need liberty. But then he consistently looked at new areas of thought, new fields of exploration, and applied the same ideas to those fields. So happened to his own field of religion, obviously very controversial among priests, say that people should make up their own minds. He did it when it came to freedom of immigration and emigration. He did it when they were talking about, so how will we ever make the northernmost part of Sweden and Finland flourish? Because no one wanted to live there. Barren, cold, desolate, empty. He came up with his own Laplandian utopia, trying to come up with an idea on how to make people move there. And it reads almost like a Gold Gulch of Ayn Randian fame, give people total freedom to experiment with crazy ideas and crazy thoughts and with the kind of rural activities that they find engaging. And the only government official should be sort of the sheriff who keeps order, but apart from that, allow people to do anything. And you know, for a fairly conservative priest, at least when you look at his thoughts on the commandments and on church attendance and things like that, it was heavy stuff. And that goes with also the agricultural techniques that he wanted to see implemented, the fact that he cooperated with local farmers and on tobacco cultivation as a priest was quite controversial. If you saw that today, it would be like a priest trying to encourage local farmers to engage in, I don't know, genetically modified crops and cannabis cultivation.
So it's interesting you say that, you know, he's very pioneering, and it's amazing that more people in the Anglo-Saxon world haven't heard of him. Did he get a chance, particularly sort of this John Galt sort of idea, as it were, did he actually get a chance to put some of that into practice, or did it just remain as ideas, you know, to encourage immigration, to experiment the market discovery process, to repopulate some of these barren lands?
It took some time, and he didn't see many of those ideas being implemented. Apart from freedom of the press, which is still sort of 250 years later, something that Swedes think of as a unique Swedish heritage coming from Chydenius, apart from that, later generations had to pick it up. But he could see that happening. When he saw the next generation, young writers and revolutionaries writing about their ideas, like Nils von Rosenstein, one of the great Swedish Enlightenment thinkers, he sent his great magnum opus to the old Anders Chydenius with a personal inscription saying, basically, this couldn't have happened without you. He saw Georg Adlersparre, an Enlightenment pamphleteer and a military, who talked about how Chydenius had influenced him. And he, Adlersparre, he became famous in his own right in 1809 when he actually led a military revolt, which turned into a revolution against the then king, Gustavus the Fourth Adolf, because he had just lost Finland to Russia and engaged in war with everybody, increasing taxes, new censorship. Georg Adlersberg led that revolution, which made that Sweden turn Sweden into more of a place with rule of law, where then classical liberals could once again express their ideas and build a forward momentum, turning Sweden in the mid-19th century into a Judean country, with abolishing the monopolies, the privileges, the subsidies, the protectionism, the tariffs, reducing taxes, implementing limited government. And then Sweden returned to Chydenius' ideas. And many of those thinkers then, they said that Chydenius got this started. And this is a start of a great Swedish tradition where we, who used to be the backwater in Europe, will soon probably be one of the richest countries in Europe.
Now, you talk about this period in his life when he left Parliament and before he was recalled by King Gustav, as it were. You said he went back to his people. What did he do? Was this an idea of putting his ideas into practice? You know, for example, I know that there are now a number of classical liberal thinkers who want to do more than just write, particularly about poverty. You know, we're looking at ideas about welfare beyond the state, and how we actually help people to incubate or initiate local non-state projects. Was he very much someone who did this, really got his sort of rolled his sleeves up and helped people to start local initiatives?
He did. And by then, he didn't sort of have any of the sort of levers of government policy or even local policy. You couldn't change anything there. But he could engage in self-help and in voluntary associations, and to engage specifically in making sure that Enlightenment ideas about learning, about science and technology, that they can be used locally as well, and that's the most powerful lever in a way, not to look to Stockholm for help, but to start to improve your own life by using the best ideas that are out there throughout the world. And through that, he also became a very, very popular priest back in his own constituency.
Now, we know he was alive in the 18th century. He died in the early 19th century. Was he very much a man of his time? You know, are there areas where you think, looking back today, you'd say, actually, I disagree with him, but I understand why he had these views, given that he was a man of his time? Or do you think, you know, or you haven't actually thought about him in those terms?
Actually, it's incredibly difficult to find the normal caveats that we all have when we look at classical liberals, sort of, yeah, they were men of their time, and obviously this wouldn't work today. I guess that perhaps some of his theological thinking wouldn't sort of prove the test of time. But even there, he was one of those who said that it's not all predestination. It's down to individual initiative that decides where you end up afterwards. When it comes to particular groups, often you see that you know, they talk the good talk about freedom, but they only have their own people in mind. It's not really like that for Chydenius, because he really starts with the poorest of the poor, the local peasants. It's for them he's doing all of this. And that's why when he moves to new territory and looks at others, it's no one is basically excluded, because he's got this idea that people are a third way between those who said that, oh, people are all awful and we have to control them, or they're just sort of poor, hopeless people, and we've got to help them. He had this incredibly hopeful attitude about people, because he met them every day in church and in their in the rural land, and he saw that they are wonderful people who work incredibly hard. They're full of initiative. They've got exemplary ability. It's just that they have to use all of that hard work and all that planning to just avoid the taxes, the police, the corruption, and all of those things. If we just remove that, we'll see amazing things happening.
When we look at him, and of course we know we talk about his work, but do we know much about his personal life? For example, did he ever get married? Was he close to his family? Do we know much about that aspect of him?
We do know lots of him, and it's been very much researched. And he was a bit of a loner, but he was at the same time a very sociable person, to the extent that he constantly spent time with... Oh, that's an awful answer. Could we skip that question? Sorry about that.
Yeah. Do you want me not just not to ask the question?
Yeah. Can yeah.
Yeah.
Can
that's we... fine. That's okay. That's fine.
Because I'm not read up on.
Don't worry. It's fine. Sorry. I didn't mean to do. Right. Okay. One, two, three. Now, when classical liberals of today read his work or look at his ideas, what do you think the biggest lesson he has left for us would be?
When I think about Jadenius, the thing that inspires me the most is that he did not limit himself to what's politically possible when he was there. He was really trying to extend the realm of the possible constantly. He was a radical, but he wanted to use that radicalism to improve people's lives here and now, but always with an eye to the future. So when everybody else said that this is too radical, this is too controversial, this won't work, he did not give up. He thought it better to be thrown out from parliament and to return back home, but sit there and keep on writing about these ideas. And in one very moving paragraph, he writes in one of his books that the ideas that this present era tramples underfoot will be picked up later on when they see the limits of the ideas that are now accepted as possible and popular, and then they will begin to have a stronger impact. And that's exactly what happened. He kept on writing and he kept on trying to get his message across, and eventually later generations began to pick it up, and not just sort of the young generation that he got to see, but even in our day and age, when we had the last reform era in Swedish politics in the early 2000s, the Minister of Finance, Anders Borg, from the Liberal Conservative Moderate Party, he had a portrait on his wall of Anders Chydenius. So I'd like to think that he was sort of constantly looking at him, thinking, yeah, you'd better learn the lessons that I tried to send you across time in this sort of intellectual time capsule.
That's a very powerful lesson. I remember being told when I was a PhD student, and someone from the Libertarian Alliance in the UK told me, you know, sometimes your ideas will take a very long time to be realized, but the important thing is to put them on the agenda, write them down, and you just never know when people, you know, keep arguing for them. So that's an incredible example of that. Now look, you and I are speaking, we're not sure whether we're in the midst of a pandemic, we're between waves, but we're clearly, you know, we've seen lots of lockdown, increased government intervention, increased state activity, you know, people have challenged liberalism and classical liberalism in general. What lessons do you think he would have had, or does he hold, for us as classical liberals as we consider the implications of this in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah, don't give up and don't become embittered. I think that's the lesson. You know, when Chydenius was thrown out because he criticized this financial plan that even his own party wanted to put in place, everybody thought he was a fool. But what he did then was not to give up, but write about it, explain why this is not going to work, fully realizing that no one believes this now, but sooner or later this plan will fail, and then there's an opening, a new opportunity, and people will begin to be frustrated with the ideas that they had formerly adhered to, and then they will look at the other possibilities. And that's exactly what happened. He retreated back to Finland, Chydenius, and people thought, what a fool to complain about this perfect financial plan. But of course, it threw Sweden into a depression. And then people began to look at, perhaps this Chydenius wasn't as stupid as we thought. So whenever you think that everybody else is crazy, don't give up, don't be embittered. Explain why they are that crazy, because if they really are, they'll return to your ideas when their own ideas prove to be throw ourselves into an abyss.
Now, you said earlier about the Swedish minister, Mr. Borg, who had a portrait of Chydenius on his wall. Is he well known, and is he still well remembered in Finland and in Sweden? Is it only amongst a sort of small classical liberal elite, or is he, you know, are there statues to him? Is there a Chydenius Institute, for example? How well known and celebrated is he today?
Well, actually, I engaged in a small experiment, because I talk about Anders Chydenius in a documentary that I made, Sweden Lessons for America, And in the beginning, I wanted to talk about Anders Chydenius and his thoughts, because they were influential in how Sweden changed historically. So I went out into the streets in Stockholm and asked people, so do you know who Anders Chydenius is? And every single person said, I have no idea. And someone said, I'm a university professor of history and I've never heard his name.
Wow.
So that's a shame. But in Finland, his memory is much more intact, and people learn about him more at school. And before Finland abandoned their own currency, the mark, they had a 500 mark bill with Anders Chydenius' face on portrait on it. That's one of the worst things of entering the euro. They abandoned that. But that kept the memory alive. In Sweden, I would say it's political circles and freedom of speech advocates. I think now then we had the 250th anniversary of the freedom of the press statute in Sweden, everybody talked about Chydenius for a while, and that gave us an opportunity to talk about his other lesser known ideas.
Well, Johan, this has been a fascinating conversation. If I could ask you kind of to do the pitch for him, as it were, in summing up, if I was to ask you, why do you think people should read about or should read the work of Anders Chydenius? What are your sort of one, two or three main selling points?
Well, I would say that this is the priest born into the poorest part of the then Swedish kingdom in the 18th century, who came up with one of the most consistent bodies of classical liberal thought that the world has ever heard of, and implemented a freedom of the press statute, which was historically unique back then in Sweden. And that teaches us something important. This is not, our ideas is not something from the ivory towers. It's not something that we read out of books. It's a very natural way of assessing human nature and human needs. And if you can pick it up out there in that harsh, cold, unfertile soil, that teaches us something, that liberalism is not something from the elites. It really grows, can grow anywhere.
Well, it might have been unfertile for crops, but it was certainly fertile for the ideas of Anders Chydenius. Johan Jorberg, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a fascinating conversation, and I've really enjoyed it, learning more about someone who I have to admit I hadn't heard of before. So if you'd stuck the microphone in front of me, I certainly would have not known who he was. For more details of all our other online content, please visit our website, iea.org.uk, subscribe to our YouTube channel, IEA London, and listen to our podcasts on Podbean. To help us keep providing free content during these tough times, please do consider making a contribution, no matter how modest, by donating online at iea.org.uk/donate-now. Thank you for watching or listening today. We hope that you'll join us again soon. Thank you.